took it with them. Rechab and Baanah walked through the Jordan River Valley all night long. Finally, they turned west and went to Hebron. They went in to see David and told him, "Your Majesty, here is the head of Ish-bosheth, the son of your enemy, Saul, who tried to kill you. The Lord has let you get even with Saul and his family." David answered, "I swear that only the Lord rescues me when I'm in trouble. When a man came to Ziklag and told me that Saul was dead, he thought he deserved a reward for bringing good news, but I grabbed him and killed him. You evil men have done something much worse than he did. You've killed an innocent man in his own house and on his own bed. I'll make you pay for that. I'll wipe you from the face of the earth." Then David said to his troops, "Kill these two brothers. Cut off their hands and feet, and hang their bodies by the pool in Hebron. But bury Ish-bosheth's head in Abner's tomb near Hebron." And they did. David becomes king of Israel. Chapter 5. Israel's leaders met with David at Hebron and said, "We are your relatives. Even when Saul was king, you led our nation in battle, and the Lord promised that someday you would rule Israel and take care of us like a shepherd." During the meeting, David made an agreement with the leaders and asked the Lord to be their witness. Then the leaders poured olive oil on David's head to show that he was now the king of Israel. David was 30 years old when he became king, and he ruled for 40 years. He lived in Hebron for the first 7.5 years and ruled only Judah. Then he moved to Jerusalem, where he ruled both Israel and Judah for 33 years. How David captured Jerusalem. The Jebusites lived in Jerusalem, and David led his army there to attack them. The Jebusites did not think he could get in, so they told him, "You can't get in here. We could run you off, even if we couldn't see or walk." David told his troops, "You will have to go up through the water tunnel to get those Jebusites. I hate people like them who can't walk or see." That's why there is still a rule that says, only people who can walk and see are allowed in the temple. David captured the fortress on Mount Zion. Then he moved there and named it David's City. He had the city rebuilt, starting with the landfill to the east. David became a great and strong ruler because the Lord All-Powerful was on his side. King Hiram of Tyre sent some officials to David. Carpenters and stone workers came with them, and they brought cedar logs so they could build David a palace. David knew that the Lord had made him king of Israel, and that he had made him a powerful ruler for the good of his people. David's sons born in Jerusalem. After David left Hebron and moved to Jerusalem, he married many women from Jerusalem, and he had a lot of children. His sons who were born there were Shemua, Shobab, Nathan, Solomon, Ibhar, Elishua, Nepheg, Japhiah, Elishama, Eliada, and Eliphelet. David fights the Philistines. The Philistines heard that David was now king of Israel, and they came into the hill country to try and capture him. But David found out and went into his fortress. So the Philistines camped in Rephaim Valley. David asked the Lord, "Should I attack the Philistines? Will you let me win?" The Lord told David, "Attack. I will let you win." David attacked the Philistines and defeated them. Then he said, "I watched the Lord break through my enemies like a mighty flood." So he named the place "The Lord Broke Through." David and his troops also carried away the idols that the Philistines had left behind. Sometime later, the Philistines came back into the hill country and camped in Rephaim Valley. David asked the Lord what he should do, and the Lord answered, "Don't attack them from the front. Circle around behind and attack from among the balsam trees. Wait until you hear a sound like troops marching through the tops of the trees. Then attack quickly. That sound will mean I have marched out ahead of you to fight the Philistine army." David obeyed the Lord and defeated the Philistines. He even chased them all the way from Geba to the entrance to Gezer. David brings the sacred chest back to Jerusalem. Chapter 6. David brought together 30,000 of Israel's best soldiers and led them to Baalah in Judah, which was also called Kiriath Jearim. They were going there to get the sacred chest and bring it back to Jerusalem. The throne of the Lord All-Powerful is above the winged creatures on top of this chest, and he is worshipped there. They put the sacred chest on a new ox cart and started bringing it down the hill from Abinadab's house. Abinadab's sons, Uzzah and Ahio, were guiding the ox cart, with Ahio walking in front of it. Some of the people of Israel were playing music on small harps and other stringed instruments, and on tambourines, castanets, and cymbals. David and the others were happy, and they danced for the Lord with all their might. But when they came to Nacon's threshing floor, the oxen stumbled, so Uzzah reached out and took hold of the sacred chest. The Lord God was very angry at Uzzah for doing this, and he killed Uzzah right there beside the chest. David got angry at God for killing Uzzah. He named that place Bursting Out Against Uzzah, and that's what it's still called. David was afraid of the Lord and thought, "Should I really take the sacred chest to my city?" He decided not to take it there. Instead, he turned off the road and took it to the home of Obed-Edom, who was from Gath. The chest stayed there for 3 months, and the Lord greatly blessed Obed-Edom, his family, and everything he owned. Then someone told King David, "The Lord has done this because the sacred chest is in Obed-Edom's house." Right away, David went to Obed-Edom's house to get the chest and bring it to David's city. Everyone was celebrating. The people carrying the chest walked 6 steps. Then David sacrificed an ox and a choice cow. He was dancing for the Lord with all his might, but he wore only a linen cloth. He and everyone else were celebrating by shouting and blowing horns while the chest was being carried along. Saul's daughter Michal looked out her window and watched the chest being brought into David's city. But when she saw David jumping and dancing for the Lord, she was disgusted. They put the chest inside a tent that David had set up for it. David worshipped the Lord by sacrificing animals and burning them on an altar. Then he blessed the people in the name of the Lord All-Powerful. He gave all the men and women in the crowd a small loaf of bread, some meat, and a handful of raisins, and everyone went home. Michal talks to David. David went home so he could ask the Lord to bless his family. But Saul's daughter, Michal, went out and started yelling at him. "You were really great today," she said. "You acted like a dirty old man, dancing around half-naked in front of your servant slave girls." David told her, "The Lord didn't choose your father or anyone else in your family to be the leader of his people. The Lord chose me, and I was celebrating in honor of him. I'll show you just how great I can be. I'll even be disgusting to myself, but those slave girls you talked about will still honor me." Michal never had any children. The Lord's Message to David. Chapter 7. King David moved into his new palace, and the Lord let his kingdom be at peace. Then one day, as David was talking with Nathan the prophet, David said, "Look around. I live in a palace made of cedar, but the sacred chest has to stay in a tent." Nathan replied, "The Lord is with you, so do what you want." That night, the Lord told Nathan to go to David and give him this message. "David, you are my servant, so listen to what I say. Why should you build a temple for me? I didn't live in a temple when I brought my people out of Egypt, and I don't live in one now. A tent has always been my home wherever I have gone with them. I chose leaders and told them to be like shepherds for my people Israel. But did I ever say anything to even one of them about building a cedar temple for me? David, this is what I, the Lord All-Powerful, say to you. I brought you in from the fields where you took care of sheep, and I made you the leader of my people. Wherever you went, I helped you and destroyed your enemies right in front of your eyes. I have made you one of the most famous people in the world. I have given my people Israel a land of their own where they can live in peace, and they won't have to tremble with fear anymore. Evil nations won't bother them, as they did when I let judges rule my people. And I have kept your enemies from attacking you. Now I promise that you and your descendants will be kings. I'll choose one of your sons to be king when you reach the end of your life and are buried in the tomb of your ancestors. I'll make him a strong ruler, and no one will be able to take his kingdom away from him. He will be the one to build the temple for me. I will be his father, and he will be my son. When he does wrong, I'll see that he is corrected, just as children are corrected by their parents. But I will never put an end to my agreement with him, as I put an end to my agreement with Saul, who was king before you. I will make sure that one of your descendants will always be king." Nathan told David exactly what he had heard in the vision. David gives thanks to the Lord. David went into the tent he had set up for the sacred chest. Then he sat there and prayed. "Lord All-Powerful, my family and I don't deserve what you have already done for us, and yet you have promised to do even more. Is this the way you usually treat people? I am your servant, and you know my thoughts, so there is nothing more that I need to say. You have done this wonderful thing, and you have let me know about it, because you wanted to keep your promise. Lord All-Powerful, you are greater than all others. No one is like you, and you alone are God. Everything we have heard about you is true, and there is no other nation on earth like Israel, the nation you rescued from slavery in Egypt to be your own. You became famous by using great and wonderful miracles to force other nations and their gods out of your land so your people could live here. You have chosen Israel to be your people forever, and you have become their God. And now, Lord God, please do what you have promised me and my descendants. Then you will be famous forever, and everyone will say, 'The Lord God All-Powerful rules Israel, and David's descendants are his chosen kings.' After all, you really are Israel's God, the Lord All-Powerful. You've told me that you will let my descendants be kings. That's why I have the courage to pray to you like this, even though I am only your servant. Lord All-Powerful, you are God. You have promised me some very good things, and you can be trusted to do what you promise. Please bless my descendants and let them always be your chosen kings. You have already promised, and I'm sure that you will bless my family forever." A list of David's victories in war. Chapter 8. Later, David attacked and badly defeated the Philistines. Israel was now free from their control. David also defeated the Moabites. Then he made their soldiers lie down on the ground, and he measured them off with a rope. He would measure off two lengths of the rope and have those men killed. Then he would measure off one length and let those men live. The people of Moab had to accept David as their ruler and pay taxes to him. David set out for the Euphrates River to build a monument there. On his way, he defeated the king of Zobah, whose name was Hadadezer, the son of Rehob. In the battle, David captured 1,700 cavalry and 20,000 foot soldiers. He also captured war chariots, but he destroyed all but 100 of them. When troops from the Aramean kingdom of Damascus came to help Hadadezer, David killed 20,000 of them. He left some of his soldiers in Damascus, and the Arameans had to accept David as their ruler and pay taxes to him. Everywhere David went, the Lord helped him win battles. Hadadezer's officers had carried their arrows in gold cases hung over their shoulders, but David took these cases and brought them to Jerusalem. He also took a lot of bronze from the cities of Beta and Berothai, which had belonged to Hadadezer. King Toai of Hamath and King Hadadezer had been enemies. So when Toai heard that David had attacked and defeated Hadadezer's whole army, he sent his son, Joram, to praise and congratulate David. Joram also brought him gifts made of silver, gold, and bronze. David gave these to the Lord, just as he had done with the silver and gold that he had captured from Edom, Moab, Ammon, Philistia, and from King Hadadezer of Zobah. David fought the Edomite army in Salt Valley and killed 18,000 of their soldiers. When he returned, he built a monument. David left soldiers all through Edom, and the people of Edom had to accept him as their ruler. Wherever David went, the Lord helped him. A list of David's officials. David ruled all Israel with fairness and justice. Joab, the son of Zeruiah, was the commander-in-chief of the army. Jehoshaphat, the son of Ahilud, kept the government records. Zadok, the son of Ahitub, and Abiathar, the son of Ahimelech, were the priests. Seraiah was the secretary. Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, was the commander of David's bodyguard. David's sons were priests. David is kind to Mephibosheth. Chapter 9. One day David thought, "I wonder if any of Saul's family are still alive. If they are, I will be kind to them, because I made a promise to Jonathan." David called in Ziba, one of the servants of Saul's family. David said, "So you are Ziba?" "Yes, Your Majesty, I am." David asked, "Are any of Saul's family still alive? If they are, I want to be kind to them." Ziba answered, "One of Jonathan's sons is still alive, but he can't walk." "Where is he?" David asked. Ziba replied, "He lives in Lodebar with Maker, the son of Amiel." David sent some servants to bring Jonathan's son from Lodebar. His name was Mephibosheth, and he was the grandson of Saul. He came to David and knelt down. David asked, "Are you Mephibosheth?" "Yes, I am, Your Majesty." David said, "Don't be afraid. I'll be kind to you because Jonathan was your father. I'm going to give you back the land that belonged to your grandfather, Saul. Besides that, you will always eat with me at my table." Mephibosheth knelt down again and said, "Why should you care about me? I'm worth no more than a dead dog." David called in Ziba, Saul's chief servant, and told him, "Since Mephibosheth is Saul's grandson, I've given him back everything that belonged to your master, Saul, and his family. You and your 15 sons and 20 servants will work for Mephibosheth. You will farm his land and bring in his crops, so that Saul's family and servants will have food. But Mephibosheth will always eat with me at my table." Ziba replied, "Your Majesty, I will do exactly what you tell me to do." So Ziba's family and servants worked for Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth was lame, but he lived in Jerusalem and ate at David's table, just like one of David's own sons. And he had a young son of his own, named Micah. Israel fights Ammon. Chapter 10. Sometime later, King Nahash of Ammon died, and his son Hanun became king. David said, "Nahash was kind to me, and I will be kind to his son." So he sent some officials to the country of Ammon to tell Hanun how sorry he was that his father had died. But Hanun's officials told him, "Do you really believe David is honoring your father by sending these people to comfort you? He probably sent them to spy on our city so he can destroy it." Hanun arrested David's officials and had their beards shaved off on one side of their faces. He had their robes cut off just below the waist, and then he sent them away. They were terribly ashamed. When David found out what had happened to his officials, he sent a message and told them, "Stay in Jericho until your beards grow back. Then you can come home." The Ammonites realized that they had made David very angry, so they hired more foreign soldiers. 20,000 of them were foot soldiers from the Aramean cities of Beth-Rehob and Zobah. 1,000 were from the king of Maacah, and 12,000 were from the region of Tob. David heard what they had done, and he sent out Joab with all of his well-trained soldiers. The Ammonite troops came out and got ready to fight in front of the gate to their city. The Arameans from Zobah and Rehob and the soldiers from Tob and Maacah formed a separate group in the nearby fields. Joab saw that he had to fight in front and behind at the same time, and he picked some of the best Israelite soldiers to fight the Arameans. He put his brother Abishai in command of the rest of the army and had them fight the Ammonites. Joab told his brother, "If the Arameans are too much for me to handle, you can come and help me. If the Ammonites are too strong for you, I'll come and help you. Be brave and fight hard to protect our people and the cities of our God. I pray that the Lord will do whatever pleases him." Joab and his soldiers attacked the Arameans, and the Arameans ran from them. When the Ammonite soldiers saw that the Arameans had run away, they ran from Abishai's soldiers and went back into their own city. Joab stopped fighting the Ammonites and returned to Jerusalem. The Arameans realized they had lost the battle, so they brought all their troops together again. Hadadezer sent messengers to call in the Arameans who were on the other side of the Euphrates River. Then Shobak, the commander of Hadadezer's army, led them to the town of Helam. David found out what the Arameans were doing, and he brought Israel's whole army together. They crossed the Jordan River and went to Helam, where the Arameans were ready to meet them. The Arameans attacked, but then they ran from Israel. David killed 700 chariot drivers and 40,000 cavalry. He also killed Shobak, their commander. When the kings who had been under Hadadezer's rule saw that Israel had beaten them, they made peace with Israel and accepted David as their ruler. The Arameans were afraid to help Ammon anymore. David and Bathsheba. Chapter 11. It was now spring, the time when kings go to war. David sent out the whole Israelite army under the command of Joab and his officers. They destroyed the Ammonite army and surrounded the capital city of Rabbah. But David stayed in Jerusalem. Late one afternoon, David got up from a nap and was walking around on the flat roof of his palace. A beautiful young woman was down below in her courtyard, bathing as her religion required. David happened to see her, and he sent one of his servants to find out who she was. The servant came back and told David, "Her name is Bathsheba. She is the daughter of Eliam, and she is the wife of Uriah the Hittite." David sent some messengers to bring her to his palace. She came to him, and he slept with her. Then she returned home. But later, when she found out that she was going to have a baby, she sent someone to David with this message, "I'm pregnant." David sent a message to Joab, "Send Uriah the Hittite to me." Joab sent Uriah to David's palace, and David asked him, "Is Joab well? How is the army doing? And how about the war?" Then David told Uriah, "Go home and clean up." Uriah left the king's palace, and David had dinner sent to Uriah's house. But Uriah didn't go home. Instead, he slept outside the entrance to the royal palace, where the king's guards slept. Someone told David that Uriah had not gone home. So the next morning, David asked him, "Why didn't you go home? Haven't you been away for a long time?" Uriah answered, "The sacred chest and the armies of Israel and Judah are camping out somewhere in the fields with our commander Joab and his officers and troops. Do you really think I would go home to eat and drink and sleep with my wife? I swear by your life that I would not." Then David said, "Stay here in Jerusalem today, and I will send you back tomorrow." Uriah stayed in Jerusalem that day. Then the next day, David invited him for dinner. Uriah ate with David and drank so much that he got drunk, but he still did not go home. He went out and slept on his mat near the palace guards. Early the next morning, David wrote a letter and told Uriah to deliver it to Joab. The letter said, "Put Uriah on the front line where the fighting is the worst. Then pull the troops back from him, so that he will be wounded and die." Joab had been carefully watching the city of Rabbah, and he put Uriah in a place where he knew there were some of the enemy's best soldiers. When the men of the city came out, they fought and killed some of David's soldiers. Uriah the Hittite was one of them. Joab sent a messenger to tell David everything that was happening in the war. He gave the messenger these orders, "When you finish telling the king everything that has happened, he may get angry and ask, 'Why did you go so near the city to fight? Didn't you know they would shoot arrows from the wall? Don't you know how Abimelech, the son of Gideon, was killed at Thebes? Didn't a woman kill him by dropping a large rock from the top of the city wall? Why did you go so close to the city walls?' Then you tell him, 'One of your soldiers who was killed was Uriah the Hittite.'" The messenger went to David and reported everything Joab had told him. He added, "The enemy chased us from the wall and out into the open fields, but we pushed them back as far as the city gate. Then they shot arrows at us from the top of the wall. Some of your soldiers were killed, and one of them was Uriah the Hittite." David replied, "Tell Joab to cheer up and not to be upset about what happened. You never know who will be killed in a war. Tell him to strengthen his attack against the city and break through its walls." When Bathsheba heard that her husband was dead, she mourned for him. Then, after the time for mourning was over, David sent someone to bring her to the palace. She became David's wife, and they had a son. The Lord's Message for David. Chapter 12. The Lord was angry at what David had done, and he sent Nathan the prophet to tell this story to David. A rich man and a poor man lived in the same town. The rich man owned a lot of sheep and cattle, but the poor man had only one little lamb that he had bought and raised. The lamb became a pet for him and his children. He even let it eat from his plate and drink from his cup and sleep on his lap. The lamb was like one of his own children. One day someone came to visit the rich man, but the rich man didn't want to kill any of his own sheep or cattle and serve it to the visitor. So he stole the poor man's little lamb and served it instead. David was furious with the rich man and said to Nathan, "I swear by the living Lord that the man who did this deserves to die. And because he didn't have any pity on the poor man, he will have to pay four times what the lamb was worth." Then Nathan told David, "You are that rich man. Now listen to what the Lord God of Israel says to you. I chose you to be the king of Israel. I kept you safe from Saul, and even gave you his house and his wives. I let you rule Israel and Judah, and if that had not been enough, I would have given you much more. Why did you disobey me and do such a horrible thing? You murdered Uriah the Hittite by having the Ammonites kill him, so you could take his wife. Because you wouldn't obey me and took Uriah's wife for yourself, your family will never live in peace. Someone from your own family will cause you a lot of trouble, and I will take your wives and give them to another man before your very eyes. He will go to bed with them while everyone looks on. What you did was in secret, but I will do this in the open for everyone in Israel to see." David said, "I have disobeyed the Lord." "Yes, you have," Nathan answered. "You showed you didn't care what the Lord wanted. He has forgiven you, and you won't die, but your newborn son will." Then Nathan went back home. David's young son dies. The Lord made David's young son very sick. So David went without eating to show his sorrow, and he begged God to make the boy well. David would not sleep on his bed, but spent each night lying on the floor. His officials stood beside him and tried to talk him into getting up, but he would not get up or eat with them. After the child had been sick for 7 days, he died, but the officials were afraid to tell David. They said to each other, "Even when the boy was alive, David wouldn't listen to us. How can we tell him his son is dead? He might do something terrible." David noticed his servants whispering, and he knew the boy was dead. "Did my son die?" he asked his servants. "Yes, he did," they answered. David got up off the floor. He took a bath, combed his hair, and dressed. He went into the Lord's tent and worshipped. Then he went back home. David asked for something to eat, and when his servants brought him some food, he ate it. His officials said, "What are you doing? You went without eating and cried for your son while he was alive, but now that he's dead, you're up and eating." David answered, "While he was still alive, I went without food and cried because there was still hope. I said to myself, 'Who knows? Maybe the Lord will have pity on me and let the child live. But now that he's dead, why should I go without eating? I can't bring him back. Someday I will join him in death, but he can't return to me.'" Solomon is born. David comforted his wife Bathsheba and slept with her. Later on she gave birth to another son and named him Solomon. The Lord loved Solomon and sent Nathan the prophet to tell David, "The Lord will call him Jedidiah." The end of the war with Ammon. Meanwhile, Joab had been in the country of Ammon, attacking the city of Rabbah. He captured the royal fortress and sent a messenger to tell David, I have attacked Rabbah and captured the fortress guarding the city water supply. Call the rest of the army together. Then surround the city and capture it yourself. If you don't, everyone will remember that I captured the city." David called the rest of the army together and attacked Rabbah. He captured the city and took the crown from the statue of their god, Milcom. The crown was made of 75 pounds of gold, and there was a valuable jewel on it. David put the jewel on his own crown. He also carried off everything else of value. David made the people of Rabbah tear down the city walls with iron picks and axes, and then he put them to work making bricks. He did the same thing with all the other Ammonite cities. David went back to Jerusalem, and the people of Israel returned to their homes. Amnon disgraces Tamar. Chapter 13. David had a beautiful daughter named Tamar, who was the sister of Absalom. She was also the half-sister of Amnon, who fell in love with her. But Tamar was a virgin, and Amnon could not think of a way to be alone with her. He was so upset about it that he made himself sick. Amnon had a friend named Jonadab, who was the son of David's brother Shimeah. Jonadab always knew how to get what he wanted, and he said to Amnon, "What's the matter? You're the king's son. You shouldn't have to go around feeling sorry for yourself every morning." Amnon said, "I'm in love with Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister." Jonadab told him, "Lie down on your bed and pretend to be sick. When your father comes to see you, ask him to send Tamar so you can watch her cook something for you. Then she can serve you the food." So Amnon went to bed and pretended to be sick. When the king came to see him, Amnon said, "Please, ask Tamar to come over. She can make some special bread while I watch, and then she can serve me the bread." David told Tamar, "Go over to Amnon's house and fix him some food." When she got there, he was lying in bed. She mixed the dough, made the loaves, and baked them while he watched. Then she took the bread out of the pan and put it on his plate, but he refused to eat it. Amnon said, "Send the servants out of the house." After they had gone, he said to Tamar, "Serve the food in my bedroom." Tamar picked up the bread that she had made and brought it into Amnon's bedroom. But as she was taking it over to him, he grabbed her and said, "Come to bed with me." She answered, "No, please don't force me. This sort of thing isn't done in Israel. It's too disgusting. Think of me. I'll be disgraced forever. And think of yourself. Everyone in Israel will say you're nothing but trash. Just ask the king, and he will let you marry me." But Amnon would not listen to what she said. He was stronger than she was, so he overpowered her and raped her. Then Amnon hated her even more than he had loved her before. So he told her, "Get up and get out." She said, "Don't send me away. That would be worse than what you have already done." But Amnon would not listen. He called in his servant and said, "Throw this woman out and lock the door." The servant made her leave, and he locked the door behind her. The king's unmarried daughters used to wear long robes with sleeves. Tamar tore the robe she was wearing and put ashes on her head. Then she covered her face with her hands and cried loudly as she walked away. Absalom kills Amnon. Tamar's brother Absalom said to her, "How could Amnon have done such a terrible thing to you? But since he's your brother, don't tell anyone what happened. Just try not to think about it." Tamar soon moved into Absalom's house, but she was always sad and lonely. When David heard what had happened to Tamar, he was very angry. But Amnon was his oldest son and also his favorite, and David would not do anything to make Amnon unhappy. Absalom treated Amnon as though nothing had happened, but he hated Amnon for what he had done to his sister, Tamar. 2 years later, Absalom's servants were cutting wool from his sheep in Baal-Hazor, near the town of Ephraim, and Absalom invited all of the king's sons to be there. Then he went to David and said, "My servants are cutting the wool from my sheep. Please come and join us." David answered, "No, my son, we won't go. It would be too expensive for you." Absalom tried to get him to change his mind, but David did not want to go. He only said that he hoped they would have a good time. Absalom said, "If you won't go, at least let my brother Amnon come with us." David asked, "Why should he go with you?" But Absalom kept on insisting, and finally David let Amnon and all of his other sons go with Absalom. Absalom prepared a banquet fit for a king, but he told his servants, "Keep an eye on Amnon. When he gets a little drunk from the wine and is feeling good, I'll give the signal. Then kill him. I've commanded you to do it, so don't be afraid. Be strong and brave." Absalom's servants killed Amnon, just as Absalom had told them. The rest of the king's sons quickly rode away on their mules to escape from Absalom. While they were on their way to Jerusalem, someone told David, "Absalom has killed all of your sons. Not even one is left." David got up, and in his sorrow he tore his clothes and lay down on the ground. His servants remained standing, but they tore their clothes too. Then David's nephew, Jonadab, said, "Your Majesty, not all of your sons were killed. Only Amnon is dead. On the day that Amnon raped Tamar, Absalom decided to kill him. Don't worry about the report that all your sons were killed. Only Amnon is dead, and Absalom has run away." One of the guards noticed a lot of people coming along the hillside on the road to Horonaim. He went and told the king, "I saw some men coming along Horonaim Road." Jonadab said, "Your Majesty, look, here come your sons now, just as I told you." No sooner had he said it than David's sons came in. They were weeping out loud, and David and all his officials cried just as loudly. David was sad for a long time because Amnon was dead. David lets Absalom come home. Absalom had run away to Geshur, where he stayed for 3 years with King Talmai, the son of Ammihud. David still felt so sad over the loss of Amnon that he wanted to take his army there and capture Absalom. Chapter 14. Joab knew that David couldn't stop thinking about Absalom, and he sent someone to bring in the wise woman who lived in Tekoa. Joab told her, "Put on funeral clothes and don't use any makeup. Go to the king and pretend you have spent a long time mourning the death of a loved one." Then he told her what to say. The woman from Tekoa went to David. She bowed very low and said, "Your Majesty, please help me." David asked, "What's the matter?" She replied, "My husband is dead and I'm a widow. I had two sons, but they got into a fight out in a field where there was no one to pull them apart, and one of them killed the other. Now all of my relatives have come to me and said, 'Hand over your son. We're going to put him to death for killing his brother.' But what they really want is to get rid of him so they can take over our land. Please don't let them put out my only flame of hope. There won't be anyone left on this earth to carry on my husband's name." "Go on home," David told her. "I'll take care of this matter for you." The woman said, "I hope your decision doesn't cause any problems for you, but if it does, you can blame me." He said, "If anyone gives you any trouble, bring them to me, and it won't happen again." "Please," she replied, swear by the Lord your God that no one will be allowed to kill my son. He said, I swear by the living Lord that no one will touch even a hair on his head. Then she asked, Your Majesty, may I say something? Yes, he answered. The woman said, Haven't you been hurting God's people? Your own son had to leave the country, and when you judged in my favor, it was the same as admitting that you should have let him come back. We each must die and disappear like water poured out on the ground. But God doesn't take our lives. Instead, he figures out ways of bringing us back when we run away. Your Majesty, I came here to tell you about my problem because I was afraid of what someone might do to me. I decided to come to you because I thought you could help. In fact, I knew that you would listen and save my son and me from those who want to take the land that God gave us. I can rest easy now that you have given your decision. You know the difference between right and wrong, just like an angel of God, and I pray that the Lord your God will be with you. Then David said to the woman, Now I'm going to ask you a question, and don't try to hide the truth. The woman replied, Please go ahead, Your Majesty. David asked, Did Joab put you up to this? The woman answered, Your Majesty, I swear by your life that no one can hide the truth from you. Yes, Joab did tell me what to say, but only to show you the other side of this problem. You must be as wise as the angel of God to know everything that goes on in this country. David turned to Joab and said, It seems that I have already given my decision. Go and bring Absalom back. Joab bowed very low and said, Your Majesty, I thank you for giving your permission. It shows that you approve of me. Joab went to Geshur to get Absalom. But when they came back to Jerusalem, David told Joab, I don't want to see my son, Absalom. Tell him to stay away from me. So Absalom went to his own house without seeing his father. Absalom was handsome. No one in all Israel was as handsome and well-built as Absalom. He got his hair cut once a year, and when the hair was weighed, it came to about 5 pounds. Absalom had 3 sons. He also had a daughter named Tamar, who grew up to be very beautiful. Absalom finally sees David. Absalom lived in Jerusalem for 2 years without seeing his father. He wanted Joab to talk to David for him, so one day he sent a message asking Joab to come over, but Joab refused. Absalom sent another message, but Joab still refused. Finally, Absalom told his servants, Joab's barley field is right next to mine. Go set it on fire. And they did. Joab went to Absalom's house and demanded, Why does your servant set my field on fire? Absalom answered, You didn't pay any attention when I sent for you. I want you to ask my father why he told me to come back from Geshur. I was better off there. I want to see my father now. If I am guilty, let him kill me. Joab went to David and told him what Absalom had said. David sent for Absalom, and Absalom came. He bowed very low, and David leaned over and kissed him. Absalom rebels against David. Chapter 15. Sometime later, Absalom got himself a chariot with horses to pull it, and he had 50 men run in front. He would get up early each morning and wait by the side of the road that led to the city gate. Anyone who had a complaint to bring to King David would have to go that way, and Absalom would ask each of them, Where are you from? If they said, I'm from a tribe in the north, Absalom would say, You deserve to win your case. It's too bad the king doesn't have anyone to hear complaints like yours. I wish someone would make me the judge around here. I would be fair to everyone." Whenever anyone would come to Absalom and start bowing down, he would reach out and hug and kiss them. That's how he treated everyone from Israel who brought a complaint to the king. Soon, everyone in Israel liked Absalom better than they liked David. 4 years later, Absalom said to David, "Please, let me go to Hebron. I have to keep a promise that I made to the Lord when I was living with the Arameans in Geshur. I promised that if the Lord would bring me back to live in Jerusalem, I would worship him in Hebron." David gave his permission, and Absalom went to Hebron. He took 200 men from Jerusalem with him, but they had no idea what he was going to do. Absalom offered sacrifices in Hebron and sent someone to Gilo to tell David's adviser Ahithophel to come. More and more people were joining Absalom and supporting his plot. Meanwhile, Absalom had secretly sent some messengers to the northern tribes of Israel. The messengers told everyone, "When you hear the sound of the trumpets, you must shout, 'Absalom now rules as king in Hebron.'" David has to leave Jerusalem. A messenger came and told David, "Everyone in Israel is on Absalom's side." David's officials were in Jerusalem with him, and he told them, "Let's get out of here. We'll have to leave soon, or none of us will escape from Absalom. Hurry. If he moves fast, he could catch us while we're still here. Then he will kill us and everyone else in the city." The officials said, "Your Majesty, we'll do whatever you say." David left behind 10 of his wives to take care of the palace, but the rest of his family and his officials and soldiers went with him. They stopped at the last house at the edge of the city. Then David stood there and watched while his regular troops and his bodyguards marched past. The last group was the 600 soldiers who had followed him from Gath. Their commander was Ittai. David spoke to Ittai and said, "You're a foreigner from the town of Gath. You don't have to leave with us. Go back and join the new king. You haven't been with me very long, so why should you have to follow me, when I don't even know where I'm going? Take your soldiers and go back. I pray that the Lord will be kind and faithful to you." Ittai answered, "Your Majesty, just as surely as you and the Lord live, I will go where you go, no matter if it costs me my life." "Then come on," David said. So Ittai and all his men and their families walked on past David. David sends the sacred chest back to Jerusalem. The people of Jerusalem were crying and moaning as David and everyone with him passed by. He led them across Kidron Valley and along the road toward the desert. Zadok and Abiathar, the priests, were there, along with several men from the tribe of Levi, who were carrying the sacred chest. They set the chest down and left it there until David and his followers had gone out of the city. Then David said, "Zadok, take the sacred chest back to Jerusalem. If the Lord is pleased with me, he will bring me back and let me see it and his tent again. But if he says he isn't pleased with me, then let him do what he knows is best. Zadok, you are a good judge of things, so return to the city and don't cause any trouble. Take your son Ahimaaz with you. Abiathar and his son Jonathan will also go back. I'll wait at the river crossing in the desert until I hear from you." Zadok and Abiathar took the sacred chest back into Jerusalem and stayed there. David went on up the slope of the Mount of Olives. He was barefoot and crying, and he covered his head to show his sorrow. Everyone with him was crying, and they covered their heads, too. Someone told David, "Ahithophel is helping Absalom plot against you." David said, "Please, Lord, keep Ahithophel's plans from working." David sends Hushai back as a spy. When David reached the top of the Mount of Olives, he met Hushai the Archite at a place of worship. Hushai's robe was torn, and dust was on his head. David told him, "If you come with me, you might slow us down. Go back into the city and tell Absalom, 'Your Majesty, I am your servant. I will serve you now just as I served your father in the past.' Hushai, if you do that, you can help me ruin Ahithophel's plans. Zadok and Abiathar, the priests, will be there with you, and you can tell them everything you hear in the palace. Then have them send their sons Ahimaaz and Jonathan to tell me what you've heard." David's advisor, Hushai, slipped back into Jerusalem, just about the same time that Absalom was coming in. Ziba gives food to David. Chapter 16. David had started down the other side of the Mount of Olives when he was met by Ziba, the chief servant of Mephibosheth. Ziba had two donkeys that were carrying 200 loaves of bread, 100 handfuls of raisins, 100 figs, and some wine. "What's all this?" David asked. Ziba said, "The donkeys are for your family to ride. The bread and fruit are for the people to eat, and the wine is for them to drink in the desert when they are tired out." "And where is Mephibosheth?" David asked. Ziba answered, "He stayed in Jerusalem because he thinks the people of Israel want him to rule the kingdom of his grandfather, Saul." David then told him, "Everything that used to belong to Mephibosheth is now yours." Ziba said, "Your Majesty, I am your humble servant, and I hope you will be pleased with me." Shimei curses David. David was near the town of Bahurim when a man came out and started cursing him. The man was Shimei, the son of Gera, and he was one of Saul's distant relatives. He threw stones at David, at his soldiers, and at everyone else, including the bodyguards who walked on each side of David. Shimei was yelling at David, "Get out of here, you murderer, you good-for-nothing! The Lord is paying you back for killing so many in Saul's family. You stole his kingdom, but now the Lord has given it to your son Absalom. You're a murderer, and that's why you're in such big trouble." Abishai said, "Your Majesty, this man is as useless as a dead dog. He shouldn't be allowed to curse you. Let me go over and chop off his head." David replied, "What will I ever do with you and your brother Joab? If Shimei is cursing me because the Lord has told him to, then who are you to tell him to stop?" Then David said to Abishai and all his soldiers, "My own son is trying to kill me. Why shouldn't this man from the tribe of Benjamin want me dead even more? Let him curse all he wants. Maybe the Lord did tell him to curse me. But if the Lord hears these curses and sees the trouble I'm in, maybe he will have pity on me instead." David and the others went on down the road. Shimei went along the hillside by the road, cursing and throwing rocks and dirt at them. When David and those with him came to the Jordan River, they were tired out. But after they rested, they felt much better. Hushai meets Absalom. By this time, Absalom, Ahithophel, and the others had reached Jerusalem. David's friend, Hushai, came to Absalom and said, "Long live the king! Long live the king!" But Absalom asked Hushai, "Is this how you show loyalty to your friend David? Why didn't you go with him?" Hushai answered, "The Lord and the people of Israel have chosen you to be king. I can't leave. I have to stay and serve the one they've chosen. Besides, it seems right for me to serve you, just as I served your father." Ahithophel's advice. Absalom turned to Ahithophel and said, "Give us your advice. What should we do?" Ahithophel answered, "Some of your father's wives were left here to take care of the palace. You should have sex with them. Then everyone will find out that you have publicly disgraced your father. This will make you and your followers even more powerful." Absalom had a tent set up on the flat roof of the palace, and everyone watched as he went into the tent with his father's wives. Ahithophel gave such good advice in those days that both Absalom and David thought it came straight from God. Chapter 17. Ahithophel said to Absalom, "Let me choose 12,000 men and attack David tonight, while he is tired and discouraged. He will panic, and everyone with him will run away. I won't kill anyone except David, since he's the one you want to get rid of. Then I'll bring the whole nation back to you like a bride coming home to her husband. This way, there won't be a civil war." Hushai fools Absalom. Absalom and all the leaders of the tribes of Israel agreed that Ahithophel had a good plan. Then Absalom said, "Bring in Hushai the Archite. Let's hear what he has to say." Hushai came in, and Absalom told him what Ahithophel had planned. Then Absalom said, "Should we do what he says? And if we shouldn't, can you come up with anything better?" Hushai said, "This time Ahithophel's advice isn't so good. You know that your father and his followers are real warriors. Right now they are as fierce as a mother bear whose cubs have just been killed. Besides, your father has a lot of experience in fighting wars, and he won't be spending the night with the others. He has probably already found a hiding place in a cave or somewhere else. As soon as anyone hears that some of your soldiers have been killed, everyone will think your whole army has been destroyed. Then even those who are as brave as a lion will lose their courage. All Israel knows